I'm sure that you have noticed on a number of occasions, as you've done your supermarket shopping, when you have stood looking very carefully at some object that you might just purchase, looking to see the sell-by date, the use-by date, the number of calories that's often possible for you to eat. And as you stand there looking at all these details, your hearing picks up the conversation from the other aisle on the other side of where you are. You don't mean to do it, but you are there. And if the conversation is of interest, you take a little longer to recognize all the details on your product possibilities and whether you want the item in your hand or not. I remember one occasion very vividly overhearing a conversation between two ladies, and they were comparing notes about a neighbor, and their conclusion, which they came to and uttered with strength and vigor in their voices, was that that particular lady in question was unreliable. So you don't have to worry, it wasn't about you. She was a lady, they said, who would stop and speak to you one time and then walk straight past you with her nose in the air on other occasions. It's possible that you may have witnessed something like that. Me being a curious person, and that's just a more polite way of saying a nosy person, I walked down the aisle I was in and turned up the aisle from which the conversation was being held, just to see who it was. And believe it or believe it not, I knew them both. And they were both in my congregation. As if I finished my shopping, and as I made my way home, I pondered about what had been said. To be passed by one minute and be made a fuss of the next is not a pleasant experience. And it's not pleasant behavior by the person who does it. None of us would like it if it happens to us. One of the ladies was actually a member of my congregation. And if I had been asked, I would have had to say that her commitment to the church wasn't huge, wasn't great. It wasn't that she hasn't attended church, but not very often. And if I were asked, I would say an attender, especially during the last 3-4 months of her pregnancies, present there to be seen on the second or third month of her new child's life. Guess what? She was still there after that time, happy that her request for baptism had been agreed to and the event had taken place. If we don't like being lifted and laid, what about God's people? There was the psalmist this morning. Fools say that there is no God, but there is. I cannot accuse Our Lady of the supermarket of being a fool. She knows there is a God. She wants her children to be baptized, and she will pay attention to those particular christenings. Being a fool, she knows that there is a God. We cannot accuse fools, those who, when they are troubled and think they are dying, make their plea to God for his protection. We can't accuse as fools those who day after day ask God to provide their daily bread. All of them believe there is a God. But I wonder in my heart of hearts whether they really believe there is a God, or is what they believe mere superstition. Without real conviction in their heart? Or is it that they think they are setting up an insurance plan, or think they are, that there will be joy in heaven when they reach it? You see, the psalmist who talks about fools, who says there are no gods, speaks as those who are wise. The Lord looks down from heaven at mankind to see whether there are any who are wise and who worship him. I would love to think that you would enjoy conversations in the supermarket, but I doubt if you would take time in these conversations to speak on matters of faith or practice. And there, I think, is the test which distinguishes fools from those who are wise. It's not what people say or think they believe. It is what they do and what their motives are for doing it. The psalmist is talking about real worship, worship which comes from the heart, not just the mind, which calculates whether it's worthwhile or not. Worship which means that we will endeavor to serve the subject of your worship without counting the cost to self. The psalmist is talking about worship which not picked up and laid down whenever it suits. The psalmist knows that worship equals the worth that we place in a person or whatever. We must be aware of the danger of being manipulative. God isn't our lamp to rub when we wish the genie to come out and do our bidding. When couples used to come to me to set a date for a wedding, I usually ask them, why on earth do you want to be married? And in particular, why on earth do you want to be married to each other? And you can imagine the look that I was given. Surely that old fool doesn't want to hear us say that we love one another. And I did. And reluctantly, they said it, because we love one another. And then I gave them, when we had fixed the date, I gave them the second very unexpected question. Naming them by name, I said to them, how are you going to handle disputes in your married life, one with the other. And again, they looked at me. We're not going to have any. And I said, mothers and fathers, oh well. They had never thought about it. And so I said, talk to one another about it. Set up a way of dealing with these things. Don't let them come as a surprise. And then there was not another question. Then there was a request to them. Please, when you leave here tonight, please no longer, don't say to people, I'm getting married, not in the morning, but on a date sometime later on. I would like you to learn and to practice saying to people, I am giving myself away in marriage on whatever date it happens to be. Marriage is about giving oneself to the other, but to do it in the certain belief, absolute certain belief, that you will be cared for, you will be looked after, and so you will deepen your love as you progress to that date of marriage. I would love to say that all of the couples that I married in my time in Ellen, there were hundreds and hundreds of them. Not all of them are still live and vigorous. Talk, listen, serve one another. That's what the psalmist was saying. That's what Jesus was saying. This is what one has to do. One has to serve the other and show that love that you claim in the way you behave towards your spouse. The New Testament often uses the metaphor of marriage. For example, Christ has the church as his bride. The church, the bride of Christ. And are there any who are wise enough to worship God? Yes, there are. They worship him in the knowledge that they will be safe, that their relationship with God is to be as one where they are married and the marriage is firm and strong and full of love and full of service. God's love for us, God's love whose height and breadth and depth he has shown in creation, the dahlias in India. In Jesus, his Son, sent into our world that we should know what God is like and how he would serve us if given the chance. God's love, the Helper, the Holy Spirit, that Christ says will come, and all of us here will know has come because we are here. And so we have to say to ourselves, and be ready to say it to other people, God so loved and loves for the benefit of all. Don't be a fool. Love him as he loves you.